Hi, everyone. Welcome to Brady's Corner. I'm Brady, and this is my corner. We have a great guest today, Hamza. Please introduce yourself.
Yes, sir. I'm Hamza Diaf. I'm the CEO of Phoenix Industries. Been running this company now for about 12 years. Started it back in 2009, 2010, and it's been a fun journey ever since.
Hamza, I want to take it back a little bit further. You were a track star.
I was a three-time All-American. I ran the 400-meter hurdles, so it was a lot of fun. In my office, I have a lot of UT-related stuff. I'm still somewhat involved in the program, but yeah, it was a fun time of my life, because in college and in track and in that world, you live in a bubble, and you're really shielded from the reality of the challenges of life after sports, after college, after that system that really takes care of all of your needs pretty much for the most part. So I really miss the comfort of all of that. You know, it was a lot of fun, though. I really enjoyed my time there.
I don't know what comfort you could find running the 400. It's got to be one of the most painful events in the history of track and field before, and you did it with hurdles.
Well, good question, Bray. Let me let you in on a little secret here. All the really fast athletes ran the 400 meters. The slow ones ran the 400 hurdles. All right. Well, I mean, there were times I'd go out and my coach would make me run the open 400 meters, and I would realize, man, these guys are fast. I managed to really master the technique of jumping the hurdle and being really efficient at it, right? So when you look at my overall my 10 hurdle jump time, it's about 2 seconds over a total of 10 hurdles. So 2 seconds on top of my fastest 400 time of 48 seconds, I was a 50 point. So it was enough to help me achieve an All-American status. Guys who run really fast, though, really aren't that efficient over hurdles, which is why they don't cross over, you know.
But I think that's such a great application to life and business. Nobody ever has straight paths, right? There's always hurdles to jump over. When you trained, did you know the exact number of steps between each of the 10 hurdles?
Yeah, it was like 22 steps to the first hurdle, you know, 14 steps in between up to hurdle 7, then 15 steps from 7, 8, 9, and 10. Maybe hurdle 9 to 10 is 16 steps if I'm really tired. You know, it depends on the level of fatigue and how much I'm pushing it. So yeah, it was fun. I think what I learned in track and field is that you have to fight your body's survival mechanism. Like that was literally the difference between being really great in athletics and being just a good athlete. Your body kicks in, your mind kicks in and tells you, I have to preserve this level of energy for survival needs, right? And you are trying to deplete that to zero in the last 100 meters of a race. Your legs are burning, you're at full lactic threshold, your oxygen saturation is down to maybe 10. Your body is telling you, stop, slow down. And the real athletes show themselves, and the ones who persevere, I think, in the last 100 meters. In fact, it was one of the things my coach always told me, I can't train your last 100 meters. That's on you. I can train the whole race, but your willpower is in the last 100. So it was a fun experience. I enjoyed it. I competed professionally for about 5 years after track.
Really?
While trying to run feet. Yep, ran the African Championships, at the Mediterranean Games. I enjoyed a semi-professional career afterwards too.
Oh, that is awesome. That is awesome. That's interesting. So the Mediterranean Games, how did you get involved in that?
My parents are from Libya. So I always had citizenship with Libya. So after collegiate, I ran a few races for Libya, and they said, hey, why don't you join the Libyan World Team? And I was like, sure. You know, so while I'm trying to start Phoenix, and running this company, I'm training and traveling the world and competing professionally for Libya. And it was great. You know, I made a little bit of money in it, but it was mostly for the love for the sport. I had a hard time really letting go of it because it was a big part of my identity, track and field. So I did that. And then eventually there came a crossroad where I had to decide Phoenix is really moving in the right direction. I have to let go of track and field officially and retire. And I did for a short period of time. It was probably 2011, 2012. I paused it until about 2015, 2016, where I gave it another shot for the Olympics in 2016 in Rio. And I went and I trained really hard and I worked hard and I was going to go compete for Libya. And then I tore my Achilles 2 months before the Olympics. And that's when I realized it's the end of the road. This is the end of the road for my track and field career. So
painful, but very painful. What a run, no pun intended. And then you had some things going on in the background, right? Remind me again, was it in college that you ordered something online and then started tweaking it?
Yep. I was always chasing the desire to be a business owner, to run a company. It was always a childhood aspiration.
For those, just for our audience, a little bit bigger background on Hamza is he's a notable character and player in the emergency responder scene. And they do a lot of products related to emergency vehicles, primarily police, right? But really all sorts of emergency response vehicles, right?
Anything that makes a sound or flashes a light on a vehicle of any type, tow trucks, fire, utility, constable, police, all of it, that is our world. We're in the visual and acoustic warning sector in automotive. So I would say it was around 2005, I started a company called SpeedTech. What it was, first of all, before that, I was always chasing a business idea, whatever I could possibly come up with. I was selling used computer parts on eBay. I was in my Nissan Sentra between track practice, driving to automotive shops, selling headlight bulbs for cars. I was always chasing something, you know. In elementary school, I would go to school with a bag full of popcorn that my mom would make. I'd put them in Ziploc bags and I'd sell them for 10 cents to my class in fourth grade, right? It was always a push for some type of entrepreneurial experience of some sort. And in college, I bought this light. It was a flashing white light. I put it in my car. It was a lot of fun. I decided, you know what? It's enough messing around with this light. Let me sell it. And when I sold it, I had a lot of police officers call me for it. You know, they wanted this.
Make you nervous? Light.
I was like, this is odd. You know, I bought this light on eBay. 2 months ago, I had it in my car. It was fun. It flashed. You know. It was white, but then these cops are calling me for it. And I was like, well, that's interesting. There must be a business here. So I stripped it apart, couldn't find the manufacturer part number on the product. I opened it up, found it on the circuit board. I Googled it. I found the factory in China. I called up that factory and I said, hey, I bought this light from you. Can I buy like 10 more? You know, they said, yeah, sure. It's just this price. And I called my dad. I said, hey, dad, remember that light that I had in my car? I think there's a business here. And he said, really? I said, yeah, can I borrow $800? I want to buy 10 of these lights and I'm going to sell them on eBay.
And he's like, okay. At this time.
Yeah, I was in college. This was a sophomore year, junior year at the time. And
juniors and sophomores and UT are not doing this. They're out on the lawn out there and doing whatever else, right? So
it was an interesting experience because I was chasing any conceivable business that can possibly make money. You know, I tried starting a mechanic shop with a buddy in college. That didn't work. The list goes on and on. And when I saw this and I said, oh my gosh, I can sell this and make money. I jumped on that opportunity. My dad helped me, gave me $800 and I bought 10 of them and I sold them and made a little bit of profit. Even I would have been happy with a dollar of profit on every unit. I mean, I was a poor college kid. So any money was money for me. So take that. Hey, dad, can I borrow $1,000? I want to buy more. Yeah, sure. Okay, here. And eventually dad's three consecutive investments. It was $800, $1,200, $7,000. And then get this, after about 6 to 8 months of doing it, I was like, dad, like I am selling these things on eBay. I have a website. I mean, I am just, mom is shipping them for me and from the garage now. Like, I'd like, can you give me your entire life inheritance, your entire life savings? It was $75,000. And my dad worked hard, 25 years as a software engineer. You know, his income wasn't the highest by any means. So he managed to save up to $75,000 of his entire total
earnings. He immigrated from Libya to the United States, right? And so he came here with nothing, right? And then built everything up from there.
And absolutely.
That's why that $75,000, it may not sound, you know, like a ton today, but that's everything he had worked for in taking care of his family here, right? So
six kids. And, you know, the telecommunication bust in 2008, but a major drain on I think our family resources, because my dad got unemployed around that time and it was a really tough period. So yeah, eventually I talked my dad into it and he said, okay, son, you know, I believe in you and let's do this. So he gave me the money and I went, I bought the most amount of police lights and flashing lights you can imagine from China. And I pushed forward and I really invested in this company and my time, my efforts. School took a back seat, track took a back seat in a way. I still competed, I still ran. And it was all for the desire of building a business and helping the family, being and providing resources. And fast forward from that investment to now, in between both companies, I think we've done a collective sum of over $250 million in the last, yeah, you know, 15 to 17 years. It's been an incredible journey.
How many employees?
I think Speedtech right now is probably at around 30 and Phoenix sits at a little over 100. So I left Speedtech after about 4 to 5 years, you know, of running that company with the family. And I left and I said, I want to start this manufacturing US distribution company. Speedtech is online e-com retail, you know, products. I said, you know what, for me, I think US distribution, designing, engineering, newer technology, that's what I want to do. So my brother runs it now as a CEO. I left it about 12 years ago when I started Phoenix. And the family runs it now. And I ventured out to start this company called Phoenix. And it's been a hell of a journey, man.
That's amazing. And that's 130, in addition to your own family, that's 130 families that you get to have a very positive impact in. What a sacred stewardship. That's an amazing thing that you've done and continue to do. And Hamza, you were nice enough to be interviewed for my book that's coming out, The Millionaires That You Went to High School With. And I think this is a perfect example. I mean, where did you go to high school here?
I went to a school called Plano East in Dallas.
Okay.
So big school. I played football there, ran track, really enjoyed
running back,
it.
Running back or wide receiver?
Wide receiver.
Okay.
Good times. Why, were you running back?
No, I was not fast like you. I was, defensive end. I could just cause chaos. Yeah, no, this is and this is what it's all about. What would you, you know, and one of the reasons I'm, you know, wrote this book was to just share some of these amazing stories and kind of break the mental mold that folks have of millionaires, you know, that, you know, a lot of folks think, and, you know, a lot of, you know, for lack of a better, a lot of high schools and colleges have taught us that, yeah, these millionaires, number one, you think of a millionaire as somebody being like Scrooge McDuck or Elon Musk or somebody, you know, some kind of billionaire that's, I'm not saying you think, but, you know, that's the collective thought of a millionaire is somebody that's unreachable, somebody that's on a pedestal and it's unreachable. And, you know, in my research, I found that there's 23 million millionaires in the United States. Now, most of those happen to be just homeowners in California and Massachusetts and New York. But for everybody else, so your story, I think, is going to resonate with a lot of the others where folks just work hard. And, you know, instead of Netflix at night, they spent time on building this up, you know, and instead of, you know, joining the softball league, they did this, you know, they spent time on this. And so it's at the end of the day, you know, really one of the common themes I'm seeing is kind of an obsession with building and building a foundation, and then sacrifice. Every, you know, there's a cost to everything. And, you know, it's about paying that price. And, you know, everything you just described, some of the price you paid, you know, even throughout college, you know, you weren't necessarily out there partying or sunning on the lawn there, the famous lawn there in UT. You know, you're building a business while everybody else is nursing hangovers and things like that. You were spending that time wisely.
Thanks for that, Brady. And, you know, I was given such an incredible honor. This was about, I would say, 5 years ago, when the University of Texas named the men's track and field, or now the track and field team room, after me. And it was an incredible feeling, because that was the room I started my first company in. See, I couldn't afford a computer. I didn't have one. So I had to go to the team room, where we had one computer, and I would sit there for 8 hours at a time straight all night, building my website and managing my eBay store online. And the guys would come find me there at 9 o'clock at night. And then they would come early in the morning, the cross country team, and they'd see me sitting there building my website and trying to sell products. You know, it was a very interesting experience. I was in that room. So now to have that room named after me is a huge honor, and kind of a full circle moment.
That's, I mean, amazing.
I was a poor college kid. This was a big memory of mine. This was sophomore year. I had $8.17 in my bank account. I did not eat the entire day before. You know, I didn't want to call my parents and ask them for money. I knew sometimes it was a bit stressful in itself, and I didn't want to burden my family there. And as an NCAA athlete at the time, you know, the school at that time didn't provide resources. So I did not eat for a day and a half. And I remember going to Jack in the Box with $8.17 in my bank account and thinking, you know what? One day I'm going to pull up to this Jack in the Box and have enough money to buy anything I want on this menu. But for now, I'll settle for just a burger. You know, there was always ambition for some level of financial freedom and the ability to make a difference. And that was always there. So I valued resources, Brady. I worked hard for it, you know. So it was a fun time.
I really appreciate that. Now, Hamza, what, you know, your story is, it's number one, it's uncommon, but I think there's some common themes among other folks that I know that have been very successful. What do you think? And it seems like, you know, everybody has the same makeup. Everybody can do, you know, what it takes, but not everybody does. And, you know, there's, you know, the folks that you went to school with, okay, for example, that wanted to start a business, and college students now, and maybe some of the folks, you know, currently in cubicles all over the U.S., what advice would you give them, you know, if they have a thought of becoming a business owner? And what, you know, what's your suggestion and thought and going from there? I mean, it's not an easy task to do what you've done.
The purpose has to be greater than the product, right? And what I mean by that is I could right now be selling refrigerators and I'll be just as satisfied. I'll know every refrigerator brand out there. I'll be pioneering and innovating every conceivable facet of what a refrigerator can and can't do. And I would enjoy it just as much as I enjoy what I'm doing now with the emergency warning lights. The purpose for me was building for my brothers, sisters, parents, and for my future family, a life of strong financial success, because I understood the struggle of what it was like to not have these types of resources growing up, right? I understand what it was like in college to go to sleep really hungry. I know what it's like to have, you know, less than $10 in your account for an entire month. I know what these experiences are like, and I did not want to build that type of future for my future family and for my family at that time too. It's a purpose outside of yourself. If it was just for me, I want to do this for me. You will find that in business, it is so difficult at times that the purpose only for yourself doesn't actually drive you as much. Mm-hmm. It's when you find that is for others, that you are empowered by their potential success in all of this, right? I come to work every day because I have 100 employees that I really want to take care of. We have 1,000 dealers worldwide that rely on the quality and production of our products to sustain their businesses. We have 30 vendors in our network globally that wake up every day to build our company products. You know,
know all of that. I mean, that's I don't think a lot of people realize, even some of the folks I've talked to, what an impact they have. And you've grasped that, you know that. So that's awesome. I agree with you, you know, understanding that, you know, having a purpose that's bigger than yourself. And you know what that reminds me of? Damon John, The Power of Broke. That's another thing of, you know, realizing where you came from and understanding that it can happen like that and working every day as if it's going to be your last. There's another thing. I've gotten more into stoicism as I've gotten older and understanding, hey, we have a limited time here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we got to make the best of it. I'm governed by this belief, two beliefs. Number one, if you have the ability to help someone, then you have the responsibility to help someone. And whether that is through resources or time or opportunity, it is a responsibility. It is not a courtesy, right? So that is the first. And second, I do believe that we are put on this earth to leave it a better place than how we found it. And if I can just do my part in whatever capacity that is, if it ends up being in the emergency warning sector, developing products to show up on the worst day of somebody's life and helping them survive that experience, I'll do that. And I'll do it as long as I'm given the opportunity to do to the highest degree I possibly can. As long as I can maintain, you know, these two belief systems, I do believe that I have really identified my purpose in all of this.
Wow. I mean, that really hits home. And I really appreciate you sharing that. I know folks are going to love this. Hamza, how can folks get in touch with you?
Yeah. My email, of course, h.deyaf, DEYAF at phoenix.com, FENIEX. I'm always an open book here. If anyone wants to reach out and communicate, Snackbox is my firm that helps me coordinate a lot of communication and conversations with others. So they're Jenna, is kind of the main point of contact there as well. But other than that, I mean, I'm always here to help and support anyone that has their ambitions along the way. So it's fun. I enjoy this, Brady. I mean, this is fun to me, man. I wake up every day and I want to get to work. And you know what a lot of people tell me, you know, I do feel I have a good work-life balance. I focus on my kids. I dedicate a tremendous amount of time to them. But work for me, Phoenix Industries, what we do here is not a chore, you know, it is a joy. And I enjoy being here around the company, around the people, around the ideas, and driving forward with the purpose that I have. So I enjoy it, man. It's not work for me.
This is great, Hamza. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
You bet, bro.
And everybody, thank you so much for joining us here on Brady's Corner. Make sure to like and subscribe, and do reach out to Hamza if you have any questions or want to reach him. And until next time, thanks for joining us here at Brady's Corner.